1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Dan Raphael and Hannah Francis. The producer is Dave Johnson, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Antonia Gonzalez, Isabel Charlet, Dr. Anthony Lizawith, and Farah Siddiqui. The director of the evening news is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Danny Shy.
And I'm Dave Johnson. All our KBOO programs are made possible by support from our members. KBOO is currently in our end-of-year fundraising drive, and our goal is to raise $75,000 by December 31st. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
For KBOO News in Depth, I'm Hannah Francis. Today is a special episode of Street Roots Radio, as is this edition of Street Roots. It is the fall anthology of the paper, a collection of the best stories from May through October of this year, 2025. I have the editor-in-chief, Kay Rambo, here to talk about it. Hey, Kay, thanks so much for being here.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. So could you start by telling our listeners sort of how this edition of Street Roots is organized?
Yeah, we do, we've done some anthology issues over the last several years. And this year, we decided to do an anthology of some of the stories we've done since the summer. There's been a lot of big stories. And some of them just don't spend as much time in the light as they should. And then we also are in the middle of our annual Newsmatch fundraiser, which is a big source of funding for our editorial work. I think it's a great time to celebrate and at least hold up some of the bigger stories we've done recently while reminding our readers why they support Street Roots and letting folks know now's a great time to do so.
Yeah, absolutely. What do you really want Portlanders to know about the people writing at Street Roots in this edition?
Well, I think I do have a letter published in this article or in this issue, kind of introducing it. And I think it really stresses the fact that Street Roots is made by normal, everyday Portlanders. We're not Ivy League grads we haven't spent any time working for, the New York Times or anything. We are normal people in this community. And so I think that kind of relationship with the city and, I think our daily lives just has a lot to do with how Street Roots approaches journalism and why it is different from really any other outlet in Portland. We're not a legacy media publication. We're not funded by big businesses with special interests. We aren't advocating to cut wages for construction workers. We aren't, I think repeating kind of lines of powerful people without what I would consider to be the requisite skepticism. And I think that Street Roots really embodies the skepticism that many Portlanders hold toward people in power and, wealthy people with special interests and special connections. So yeah, I think it, I really hope, I guess, that this is part of people understanding why Street Roots is so different.
Yeah, absolutely. Street Roots is really unique that way. I think it translates in the power of the work that y'all do. So can you tell me a little bit about why you picked the stories that you picked for this edition?
Yeah, I think I mean, they're really good stories, and I think that they are as relevant today as they were a few months ago, would be kind of first and foremost. I think these stories also underline something else that I bring up in my letter introducing the issue, which is that, you know, these experiences that I think are, that we have as a staff, that I think are much more relatable to our readers than people might assume for the media, you know, it informs our questions, and it informs, you know, I think we look at issues from a different perspective, fundamentally. And I think that is because, you know, we're not people who I think have benefited from, you know, punitive policies against impoverished people or different forms of discrimination. So, you know, I don't think we approach these issues from this question of, well, you know, some people are being harmed by this, but some people are actually benefiting. So let's put these things together and kind of put them on equal footing. And I think all of these stories avoid doing that. I think all of these stories are focused on centering the experiences of people who are most impacted by things. And I think that, you know, our experiences as people, you know, when we look at something like sweeps, for instance, you know, there's a couple stories in this issue. One of them we published over the summer with ProPublica, looking at how sweeps have increased deaths of homeless Portlanders. And then there's another story published more recently showing that Keith Wilson is sweeping way more encampments than Ted Wheeler ever did. And I think, you know, there are a ton of articles that you read, I think, in Portland about sweeps. And most often they're focused on, well, you know, some people say they're losing access to critical resources, while business owners feel that, you know, it makes the city more welcoming for customers or tourists or whatever the case may be. But rather than, I think, you know, leaving this as a question of, well, some people say this, other folks say that, we went and did the work to find what the truth was in these things. And there is an overwhelming body of evidence to suggest that sweeps increase deaths among homeless Portlanders. I mean, you can see it in our own local population, the way that sweeps and homeless deaths have increased at a similar rate over the last decade. And so I think, you know, all of our stories in this issue, I think, really highlight that kind of, we're taking a step back at the beginning and asking different questions. And, you know, it doesn't inform the conclusion. Obviously, we are not, I think, working backward from a hunch or a thesis, but I think it clearly produces journalism that is geared toward different people and is representative of the concerns and issues of different people than we may see commonly represented.
Thanks. So let's talk about the stories. The first one in the anthology is by Grace Mongali, who is the Snowden intern reporter. And it's about some of the organizing in the Filipino community. Can you tell me more about this?
Yeah, Grace was our intern over the summer, and she did a number of excellent stories that were cover stories. And I believe this one was one of those cover stories. And it's looking at kind of the history of discrimination and also, I think, a fight against it for Filipino migrant workers, which is, you know, of course, anyone in the U.S. who's not born here, there is a lot of very scary stuff happening. And, you know, I think these fights for people to have their equal rights and for people to be treated as I think we all know people should be treated, those fights are ongoing. And so I think, you know, it is important to contextualize modern issues by understanding the history of them. And I think Grace just did an excellent job, you know, tracing a lineage of struggle and resistance, and also, you know, a lineage of oppression, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's a great story. And then the second in the anthology is by Jake Thomas, and it's about how Oregon leaders were promising better living situations to folks in prisons, and how there's been sort of a lack of accountability around that. Can you tell me more about that?
Yeah, this story, I mean, the one that Jake wrote is really, you know, a follow-up to what is, you know, now half a decade of pretty groundbreaking reporting that Street Roots has done on the Oregon Department of Corrections. And it really started in 2020, shortly before I got to Street Roots, looking at COVID deaths in state prisons. And that work continued I wrote a series last year looking at the increase in deaths in Oregon's prisons and found a pretty shocking pattern of negligence. After that story came out, the state put some people on leave and conducted an investigation and eventually fired a couple of the people discussed in the story. And, you know, there are a lot of promises to address these issues, specifically around denied care and delayed care, and people just not getting the medical treatment that they are entitled to legally. And so Jake really looked into, you know, where are things now? And unfortunately, you know, there's been a lot of promises, like you said, but we've not seen the follow through yet. And, you know, we're seeing and hearing a lot of the same issues that existed, you know, last year and the year before that and the year before that. Those issues are continuing. And a lot of that has to do with the state incentivizing prisons not to allow people to leave prisons for care. And there are many, many things that, you know, normal medical procedures that people need that the prison cannot provide. And, you know, the prison doesn't have a ton of specialists on staff. So, I mean, it's just a very dangerous situation that we've continued to monitor.
Yeah. Kind of similar vein, you wrote a story about how Oregon leaders have been promising better situations for folks who are unhoused. And deaths have really gone up since then. There hasn't been a lot of follow through there. Can you tell me more about this story?
Yeah, I mean, this was, there were months and months of data analysis that went into this, and talking with various doctors and researchers and officials just about the impacts that sweeps have. And you know, I think I've said it probably on this show, but, you know, it really started as this question of, you know, covering homelessness. I frequently hear and see the phrase sweeps kill. And that's, I think there are, you know, just kind of common sense understandings of why that might be the case. I think it's also used somewhat as like a rallying cry. And so I really set out to figure out, I mean, how hyperbolic is this? You know, are we talking about these kind of one-off situations that are tragic, but maybe aren't systemic, right? Where a mistake was made, somebody lost their medication, or are we talking about a very well-funded effort that risks people's lives and objectively puts people in a worse position for survival and stability? And it was certainly the latter. I mean, there was just a ton of research. I mean, recent studies especially showing, you know, that sweeps remove people from medical care. They increase the risk of overdose, which is the leading cause of death among homeless Portlanders. You know, and there are many psychological effects that are very dangerous and negative and kind of corrosive if, you know, the stated intent of all this is to put people in a better position to get the services they need or to find stability. You know, sweeping people, especially at, I mean, you know, we're talking thousands and thousands a year. You know, it is counterproductive and dangerous and inhumane. I think are objectively understatements. You know, it's, and I think that's some of the power in Street Roots work, right? Like, this isn't about people's opinions. This isn't about making a business association feel good about itself. These stories are about the truth. And the truth is that the city of Portland is investing millions and millions of dollars into a program that is imparting violence on the most marginalized people in our community. So that's what that story is about.
And even since this article has been published, the city of Portland started up their sweeps program again with a lot of enforcement. Are you going to be following up on that story?
Yeah, I mean, I will say, you know, there's a lot of like misconceptions and you know, like Keith Wilson has said in front of city council that, oh, we don't do sweeps like that anymore. People are being connected to shelter. That's not true. That may be the goal. That may be, you know, I don't know if that's actually believed by people in the city administration, but it's certainly not the case. And that never stopped, right? Like, they continued sweeping people at a higher rate, actually, once Wilson was in office. And they've continued increasing funding to the part of the city that contracts a private for-profit company to sweep homeless encampments. And you hear all these arguments about like workforce development, because these companies often rely on folks who are leaving incarceration or were homeless at some point. And, you know, I mean, I think the obvious question is, well, couldn't you employ folks to go pick up garbage from homeless encampments like they did during the pandemic? Which is, I will say, the 1 year that we saw the homeless mortality rate actually decrease was the 1 year that we saw a decrease in sweeps. But yeah, I mean, the city continues. And I mean, the reality is it's what the business associations want. It's what most neighborhood associations are lobbying the city for, is to increase and continue the sweeps program.
Thanks. And then as far as the anthology goes, y'all also have a piece by Jeremiah Hayden, which is sort of quick write-up on what to do if you spot ICE. So will you walk me through some of these steps and tell me why y'all are doing this reporting?
Yeah, I mean, again, objectively, what ICE is doing is harmful. You know, it puts people at risk. It rips families apart. And, you know, I guess people can feel like that's a good thing if they want to, but it is objectively harmful for the people going through it. And so, yeah, we felt it was important and appropriate to give our readers some resources if they do spot ICE. I mean, the first big thing is to film what they're doing. There's also the PIRC hotline, but it is a statewide network, I will say, as it notes in the story or in the piece. And trying to get information about the people who are being taken, and then, you know, trying to call PIRC to share that information, and just make sure that, you know, people are able to disseminate as much info as possible, and try to protect people from ICE raids.
Thanks. And then finally, you've got a vendor profile here on this anthology, which is in every single edition of Street Roots. Who's in this one?
Turtle is our vendor profile this week. I love the nickname.
Thanks. And how can people support Street Roots?
Yeah, I mean, the best way, as always, is to go find a vendor. Our cover is beautifully illustrated by Etta O'Donnell King, our editorial art director. And did I say it's in color? It is in color. So I would say go find a vendor and buy a paper. If you can't do that or you'd like to do more, I would encourage you to donate to Street Roots during its Newsmatch campaign, which runs through the 7th. Every dollar donated will be matched, which of course is great for us. And between now and whenever we raise $7,500, it is tripled. So yeah, it's a great way to make a dollar go farther for Street Roots.
Thanks. Anything else you want to add?
Nope. Thanks so much. Go buy a paper.
You've been listening to a conversation with Street Roots editor-in-chief, Kay Rambo, about the recent Street Roots Fall Anthology for 2025. For KBOO News in Depth, I'm Hannah Frank.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You are listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Althea Billings. I am joined on the show today by Laura Grimes, the executive director of Oregon Arts Watch, to talk with me about the latest Oregon arts news. Welcome to the show, Laura.
Thanks for having me, Althea.
Yeah, happy to have you back with us. So let's get into it here. Some important things happening kind of related to, I don't know, this is sort of a political story, or this is a more hard-hitting news feature here. A bunch of Oregon nonprofits are joining a class action suit against the fundraising platform GoFundMe. Talk to me about this story. What's been going on?
This is actually a national story, and it's kind of weird. It's a big deal in the nonprofit world, and I really haven't seen much reported on it in other news platforms, maybe because we work with a lot of arts organizations. We work in the nonprofit world, so this really matters to us that we've been paying attention to it. but the whole story behind this is that the corporate giant GoFundMe created unauthorized fundraising pages for nonprofits groups in Oregon and across the U.S. And this happened in October. And I'll explain the whole background, and then I'll talk about the latest news. So when it established these pages, they didn't get any, the nonprofit organizations that were featured didn't know anything about these. They didn't have any prior consent. They weren't made aware of this. GoFundMe had obviously mined a lot of publicly available data, like the names and mission statements. You know, perhaps they looked at tax records. They had the federal tax ID numbers, but not always the information was accurate. So they created these pages, which looked really legitimate, but this was a total disaster, and it led to a lot of outcry from the nonprofit community. And a few days later, GoFundMe backpedaled. They apologized, and they adjusted the features on its platform. So to explain why this was such a disaster and why this was so important to the nonprofit community is that, like I mentioned, this information looked really legitimate, and yet it, because the information wasn't always accurate, it could misrepresent the organizations. And GoFundMe also charged a transaction fee, which is common for donor sites, you know, like a 2.2% fee plus like 30 cents for each transaction. But sometimes these fees could also include a whopping 14% to 16.5% tipping fee, and that amount would go directly to GoFundMe instead of to the nonprofit organizations. GoFundMe also had a sophisticated search engine optimization, or SEO, in effect. So a browser search that anyone might do would pull up the nonprofit's GoFundMe site before their own site or donation page. So the whole project was designed to funnel money to the, you know, for-profit corporation GoFundMe instead of nonprofits, which are already hard hit now to raise money. So this was really disruptive. It created a lot of headaches and anxiety for nonprofit businesses. When I learned about it, I had to stop everything and I went to investigate what was going on. I checked our own page on GoFundMe, which had inaccurate information. So I claimed it, which was the only option I had at the time. I couldn't just take it down, and I didn't want it. You know, I wanted to make sure that what was there accurately represented us. My biggest fear was that I didn't want the page to be fraudulently hijacked by someone else and to raise money in our name, which would have put our reputation and integrity on the line. 'Cause when donors contribute to a GoFundMe site instead of through an organization's legitimate donation channels, the organization, the nonprofit organization, doesn't get the donor information to follow up with a thank you or to provide receipts or develop a relationship with the donor. So, you know, they could miss out on potential future donations. So for many reasons, this was just kind of a mind-boggling, terrible decision by GoFundMe. So the latest news is that there is a class action lawsuit that is being filed, and a Eugene law firm, Arnold Gallagher, is one of the two law firms in the country that are filing this lawsuit, and organizations can check out what that means, that information, the links about the class action lawsuit are on our site, or orartswatch.org. To find more information about it.
That GoFundMe did this is really, really stark. And I mean that you experienced it as well as somebody who had to go through and suddenly claim this page to keep something worse from happening.
Right, right. And so this happened in like late October. So there was a whole sort of brouhaha then. And it created a lot of anxiety. You know, as a person who runs a nonprofit business, just that the disruption and anxiety, and to think that, you know, somebody could misrepresent you, and so, you know, you lose that trust and integrity with your donors. So it there are a lot of factors that go into why this just wasn't a great decision. So we'll see what comes out of this class action lawsuit, which will continue to follow.
Do you know what the asks are so far from the class action suit? Like, what sort of restitution are they wanting from GoFundMe?
It hasn't been filed yet, so they're working on it. But I'll just quote, which I thought was kind of an interesting statement that is on the lawsuit page that they plan to file. From what I understand, it hasn't been filed yet. I am not seeing wording that it actually has. But this quote says, "We are fighting to protect the integrity of charitable giving and to defend the autonomy of nonprofit organizations. When a for-profit company hijacks donation streams, rewrites nonprofit organizational narratives, and redirects public support without consent, it undermines the very purpose of philanthropy. This is about holding GoFundMe accountable for exploiting trust and misusing its platform to prioritize its own revenue at the expense of mission-driven work by nonprofit organizations."
Thank you for that. On a slightly lighter note, we are in a season of a great many holiday performances in the Oregon arts world. Can you give us a taste of what's going on this month?
All kinds of fun holiday shows that people can see. Black Nativity, which is what Passenart puts on every year. It's a production that's based on a song play by Langston Hughes. It runs just 2 weekends. It ends this coming weekend on December 7th. So it was first performed in 1961, and it's an adaptation of the Nativity story, but through the Black experience. But it doesn't, it's not necessarily, I would say, that you have to be religious to see it. It's just a really fun community experience. The show is different every year, so you can make a tradition out of it and never feel like you're seeing the same show. So I would describe it as just a way that everyone really celebrates and feels joy. Every time I have seen it, I have left feeling grateful that I got to experience it. You know, it's hopeful, it's fun, it's very uplifting. It's just a joyful kind of occasion. It feels really special to be a part of it. Lots of other shows are going on. Of course, there's always the Nutcracker by Oregon Ballet Theater and other dance performances that are not Nutcrackers, like Body Vox has their Pearl Dive project going on. And of course, choir music is big this time of year. Blueprint Arts, it's a company that has several choirs and they have a couple of instrument ensembles. So they have several shows on December 13th. Oregon Repertory Singers has shows this weekend and next. There's, of course, Handel's The Messiah by the Portland Baroque Orchestra is always a tradition every year. And it's running December 11th through the 14th. For theater, Portland Playhouse is doing a Christmas Carol. Salton Stage is doing 2 Shakespeare shows in repertory, which is really ambitious. They're doing Much Ado About Nothing and The Winter's Tale. Portland Center Stage is doing Little Women. And Imago has Zuzu, which is always really fun and worth a smile. So there's a ton more out there, too. This is just a small sampling. So lots of opportunities to go see and experience and be joyful this holiday season.
Are there any shows in particular that you're looking forward to or that are part of your holiday tradition?
I've seen several of these, and like Black Nativity is always really fun. We usually get out to see something. We have family in town. It's nice to take them to most of these. And that's the kind of thing this time of year, a lot of shows are really family friendly. It's an easy thing to go take, all the generations in a family too. And you don't feel like you will offend anybody or they'll be bored. They're always really nice, heartwarming shows. So it's worth seeing and it's worth experiencing with the people you love.
If our listeners are interested in finding out more about the stories that we talked about, what's the best way for them to do that?
You can find out about any of these shows or events or stories at Oregon Arts Watch at orartswatch.org.
Thank you so much for being on with us, Laura. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I always appreciate it too, Althea.
I've been speaking with Laura Grimes, the Executive Director of Oregon Arts Watch, about some of the latest and greatest Oregon arts news. More information is online at orartswatch.org. For KBOO News In Depth, I'm Althea.
Portland.
We know a KBOO membership is at the top of everyone's wish list this season. Give the gift of supporting grassroots